So I'd like to first ask permission to give a brief talk on the Dharma from my senior bhikkhus here at Wat Mapchan, and also the junior monks and novices here that are listening. So the topic of today's talk, what Lungpo Anan would like me to talk about is my experience about recently we've had a little, me and three other foreign monks here at Wat Mapchan, we decided that we wanted to sort of give our practice as an offering to Thanajaya Nan for his upcoming 70th birthday. So I decided that we wanted to do something to really intensify, you know, our efforts in the practice. So decided that we would just have from one uposa today and to the next, we would have refrain from laying down during the night time. So from 6 p.m. until 6 a.m., we would refrain from lying down. Some of the monks even took it further than that, and they probably laid down closer to the midday. And we also decided that we would keep noble silence for this nine period. And then after we've finished doing these practices at the end of the, it was 9 days in total, then we would dedicate the merit that we've made to our teacher, Venerable Ajahn Anand, so that he may live a long life with good health and hopefully at least have the ability to give rise to more enlightened beings into this world for the benefit of all beings. So we wanted to do something. And so we thought practice as offering, Patipata Puja, we thought this would be the best way to sort of pay him back. And also it was just an opportunity for us to sort of intensify our practice and sort of see what we can get out of that, because, you know, the night time is a very peaceful time. Up here in Wat Mapchan, the poster hall, which we're currently sitting in now, is at the top, very top of the hill. And during the night time, there's no one around here. It's very peaceful. The weather is very cool and nice at the top of the hill. We have the chede just behind. We also have the vihara of Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara to the left of us here as well. So it's a very good sort of energy zone in this place. And many people that come to the monastery, they always say how their samadhi is a lot better in Wat Mapchan. So it's a very auspicious environment, and at night time it's incredibly peaceful. And had the good fortune of having three friends join me for this. All three of them are sitting with us now. So had Venerable Yasa here from Abayagire, Venerable Metiko, who's just come from America as well, and also Samanera Rishen, that's just recently ordained with us from Malaysia. So so Ajahn Thanajaya Nani just wanted me to just, you know, say what sort of experience I got out of this. And so it's not the first time we've done this type of practice. We, in fact, when I first came to Wat Mapchan, there was a big group of monks all practicing through the night, and it was very easy for me to just slip in there and practice with the monks. At the time I was a white-robed anagarika, And some monks held the Nisa Cheek, which is the refraining from laying down. Some didn't lay down at all. One monk for about 6 years didn't lay down. And he's only just recently had to break it because he had a illness which required him to lay down. Other than that, he probably would still be carrying on not laying down at all. So, and then there's another senior monk that was doing the practice for about 2 years in total, even though he was probably mid-40s, so still very strong. And some of these monks, they would just sit there all night, they wouldn't move, and it was very inspiring. So at the time when I was a newcomer to this monastery, I was having a bit of trouble like with sleepiness. So I just thought, okay, I just won't sleep, you know, through the night, we'll see how that goes, you know. So it was very fun for me. During the daytime, there was a lot of work to be done. When you were a newcomer to the monastery, usually as an Anagarika, you have to do a lot of service and helping, you know, carrying basket around to receive the alms food of the monks in the morning, and sweeping and cleaning tables down and stuff, and just being there, you know, just in case someone needs you for, you know, some kind of errand what the monks can't do. So I couldn't really find time to practice. I found when I coming from England, so I'm originally from England, the weather usually, apart from the summer, is pretty cold. So in the afternoon in Thailand when I first came, it was so very hot, and I just found it very unpleasant. So it was difficult to meditate for me in that part of the day. So I just thought, okay, I'll just meditate the most during the nighttime, because in the nighttime it's very conducive. We don't think of doing work, projects, or anything like that. There's no one we can go and find to talk to in the middle of the night. So we're kind of like kind of forced in a sense to just do the practice, you know. So I found it very beneficial in my first year, and so I wanted to do it again. So this time around where we did it for a period of 9 days, once again very beneficial, and also keeping noble silence was also something which had a lot of benefit. And so sometimes we get questions from people about how they can stay with their chanting, stay with, they don't let their mind wander off when they're chanting the chants in the morning or the evening. And so what was quite apparent for me, whether it was from practicing a lot more through the night or just particularly keeping my speech down to a minimum, just saying what's completely necessary to get by, you know, just for the convenience, but no, you know, talking for fun, no talking for pleasure, not even talking about, you know, Dharma, just completely necessary things. And I found that when we got to the evening, I enjoyed chanting every night and every single verse. And so it was very apparent that these things were helping that. You know, normally we might feel a bit of boredom from time to time. We're chanting, you know, the like recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and we just don't connect with it sometimes. Our minds don't feel receptive. We might feel a bit bored. We might feel it's a bit tedious. And so on this occasion, there was not a single time where I felt like that. And that was quite interesting to me because, you know, the mind has its ups and downs. So, and there was a very strong sort of desire to go up and practice every night. I was very, I felt very joyful about, you know, having the opportunity just to, you know, train my mind to practice and to put forth some like strong effort. So in total it was a very positive experience. We had a group doing it, so I know a few of you who are practicing now, you online, you have with you a group or your family members, and yeah, it's something which is like very helpful in the practice. You can support each other a little bit of healthy competition also good. You can, you know, try not to be the first one to, you know, fall asleep, or you're not the first one to, you know, to give up, and you help each other sort of build your parami together. Or you help each other to patiently endure more than you would if you was on your own. So it was very beneficial to have a group. There was also some good teachings from this 9-day practice that we had, is that there was one day in particular where my mind state was a bit depressed, and I just figured it was just on account of having low mindfulness at the time. I'd sat for about an hour or so and still no improvement, so I thought, okay, well, if sitting's not working, then I'll just get my mala bead out, you know, and recite the recollection of the Buddha until the emotion goes away. So I thought at least three malas, so that's like 320, what is it, 20-something rounds of like itipiso. So it was very interesting to see how after about 50 repetitions of the mantra, my mind state almost felt like it went up to a higher sort of state of being. It's almost like you get out of the, you know, the suffering realms, and you come up into the, you know, it's like you put your head above the surface of the water. And then as I carried on chanting, it just felt like the mind just kept ascending higher and higher to a better state of being. And so this is like a really amazing thing about these chants, is that they have special energy to them. And I think from putting forth that strong determination, if you have some kind of bad, you know, mood, a mind state, you feel very bored, or, you know, something negative, and if you just sort of make a strong determination to keep chanting until that's improved, then, you know, the energy, it feels like it, the energy of strong effort itself feels like it really uplifts the mind itself. So And so this night, it was a good reflection, because what in out of the 9 days, I would probably say that it was the worst in terms of my mind state or my mood in the beginning. But it actually turned out in the end to be like the best in terms of my mind state and my mood as well, because in the end, it was the suffering that I was experiencing was actually the basis for the sort of joy, or the sort of, you know, the good meditation that come afterwards. Because if there's suffering in the mind, then we've got more motivation during those periods to, you know, to really do the practice, keep doing it, and just keep practicing mindfulness. So it was very interesting that in the same night, that initially my mood was very bad, you know, I was feeling a bit, you know, maybe a little bit disheartened about, you know, the practice during that one night. But then, you know, the following, so what we'd do is we'd practice in the hall here until 4 a.m. most nights, and then we'd go down to do chanting at the bottom of the monastery at 5, and then, yeah, most days after the chanting in the morning would have finished, I would have felt very exhausted, very tired, fallen asleep in my sort of, you know, sat on the floor, fallen asleep during the chanting, very, very exhausted. But on that one night, I had a lot of inspiration and energy from my mindfulness, and I wanted to continue sitting on that night. And it was quite amazing, actually, because you see that even if you have no sleep whatsoever, but if there's mindfulness there, even when it was time to go back and take a rest, I'd lay on my bed and I just didn't feel tired. I didn't want to sleep. So it was very interesting. Normally, if you have no sleep whatsoever, you think you'd at least be able to you know, have desire to rest for at least, you know, a short time, but it was just completely not there. So it really shows the power of mindfulness and what this can do for us. And so these types of practices, when I first announced that I wanted to do this, and my friends who joined me for this practice, there was perhaps a bit of reluctance or a bit of worry, you know, can we do this, you know, is it kind of pushing ourselves a bit, you know, too hard on top of all the sort of other work and activities that we have to do in the monastery, the schedule. But I feel, yeah, it's an interesting reflection for us, because sometimes we have this feeling of like we can't do something, or we're worried about, you know, committing ourselves to a certain practice, especially for a longer period. And I also started to have this doubt. I started to think, you know, am I in the same position I was in the beginning? Can I still do this type of austerity practice, you know? And there's been times in the past where I've not listened to that thought, and I proved to be right, and actually it wasn't a good idea, but this was not one of them. It was very interesting. I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe this is a bad idea. But as it turned out, it was better than I could have imagined. It was very helpful, and it was a great opportunity to actually to see what benefits you get out of these types of practices. So in the way of the Dhamma, this the refraining from laying down is one of the Dutanga practices, and then the what they call the Mukhawat in Thai, which is noble silence. This is almost kind of like an additional one that people practice. And these two work very well together, I find. Sometimes when we're really tired, if we've not slept the night before, we tend to start to want to indulge in our other senses. You know, we want to talk a lot to alleviate this unpleasant feeling of being tired. Or we want to, you know, sort of eat more nice food, or, you know, some kind of other sense pleasure to sort of make up for the suffering of lack of sleep. And so I wanted to do something to make sure that that didn't happen. So we sort of, we had this extra, you know, rule about not sleeping, not speaking. And so one of my friends recently gave me a statue of the Lord Buddha when he was practicing the Atthakilamathanu Yoga practices. So the austerities which he practiced before he found the middle way. And so there's a statue in India. The Buddha is very skinny, very emaciated. He talks about this in one of the suttas, where his spine is so little fat and even flesh on his body that the spine bone sticks out through his chest. And if he touched his stomach, then he could meet his spine bone by touching his stomach. And veins popped out of his arms, and his eyes were so deeply embedded in his sockets, and his hair would fall out whenever he rubbed his head or his body. His hair would fall off of his body. And so we all know that the reason that he did this is because he thought that this, at the time, was the way to attain full enlightenment. And so he pushed himself to his utmost limits. And the Buddha said, after practicing, so after denying himself real food for so long, and eating, I think it was just like maybe a berry or a leaf, I can't remember what exactly he had. It was a very, very small amount of food that he intook. And so he became emaciated. And the reason he did this was to try to attain to the deathless, or enlightenment. And my friend recently gave me a statue of this Buddha image. And I had another friend really sort of, he told me a quotation from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he said that the Dalai Lama actually likes this particular statue of the Buddha the most, or it's one of his favorites, something like that. And he said the reason for this was that when you look at this Buddha, who is incredibly emaciated, incredibly skinny, he said, it shows right there that this Dhamma that we're trying to become enlightened to is not easy. It's not easy to attain to that. So every time you see this image of the Buddha, you're reminded that, you know, this practice is not easy. The Buddha had to suffer for 6 years, I think it was, doing these austerities, pushing his body and mind to its utmost limit, to the point where he said that other ascetics or Brahmins could push themselves perhaps to the extent which the Buddha or the Bodhisattva did at that time, but they could not exceed his efforts. And later we found out in the text that it was actually some sort of divine beings that was keeping the Buddha alive. So for a normal man, he probably would have died, you know, doing this level of austerity. So I thought this ties in well to this practice that we are all doing here today. You know, we're all practicing the Dhamma together, and we're all trying to have mindfulness. And there will be moments where it's very difficult, and we may feel like giving up. And in those moments, we can think of the Buddha, can think of the time where in his past lives he was building his spiritual perfections, and there was times where he was on a boat and the boat started to sink. And so the Bodhisattva took a lot of, I think it was ghee and oil or something, or sugar, so that he could have as much energy as he could possibly have. And then he swam in the ocean to the nearest shore for, I think it was 7 continuous days. So you can imagine if we were to swim for like one full day, how tired we'd feel. And so the Bodhisattva had this virya to just push through, to just know what the end goal is and just strive for that. No matter what kind of internal obstacles or difficulties come up, you just keep doing it, and you just find a way to get through it. These are some things that we can reflect on. If our practice is not going as we would like it to be, then it's important that we know it's not certain. We might feel like we're just getting nowhere with this practice. Peace is not coming up as we want it to. But we need to keep reflecting that it's not sure. Many times I've seen that you think something's a certain way, and then you just keep practicing, and then things change, and it can be all of a sudden. So the important thing, I think, is just to keep having perseverance in the practice. We've all got faith to come here and devote your time to practice the Dhamma. So, yeah, just perhaps just I'd like to, yeah, give you a bit of maybe motivation or encouragement to keep at it. See out the full, is it 7 days? Full 7 days of the retreat. Keep practicing. Don't give up on your sitting meditation. If you're having trouble, you know, just keep at it. Your walking meditation. And yeah, I will finish the talk here. So.